former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's a great day to be alive, and it's a great day to be a better. Welcome inside of the VSiN studios here at the Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. This is the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings on the DraftKings Network. We say hello to everyone. You can view us on Samsung TV, Roku, Zumo Play, DraftKingsNetwork.com, VSiN.com. Femi Abebefe here hanging out with you guys in Las Vegas. Michael Lombardi, usually in the great state of New Jersey, now has an empire state of mind. Michael, good morning. How are we doing?
Good. I had a meeting across the river, as Bruce Springsteen would say. So, yeah, I'm on the New York side now for a little bit and then be back in my home office tomorrow, which will be nice. And we got three games today to watch, which even better. So, NFL football on Saturday is great. And they've given us a really I think it's a great slate today, Femi. I really do. I mean, a lot of interesting games, starting with the first one. I think it's going to be a lot of fun to watch Minnesota's. Their defense has played so well against Cincinnati, which has done something that I didn't think they could do, which is score 34 points 2 weeks in a row with Jake Browning.
Yeah, no, the NFL, kudos to the league office for setting us up with this schedule here, because all three of these games, playoff implications, the game in the afternoon, our producer Elliot already nervous about his Colts, hashtag for the shoe. They have pretty much an elimination game in that AFC wildcard race. That line is one down to a pick where I'm sitting here at Circa. We'll get into all of it. Of course, the Motor City primetime game between the Broncos and the Lions later on. But let's set the table for what we do have over these next 2 hours. Joining us in 30 minutes, former NFL quarterback and MVP, Rich Gannon, now analyst over at SiriusXM. He'll be joining us at 10:30 Eastern, 7:30 Pacific. We'll talk all things NFL, get his thoughts on today's games. Also, we'll ask Rich who his MVP is right now with four games left, because nobody better than Rich would be able to explain what an MVP looks like since he won the award back in 2002. Then at 11:30 Eastern, 8:30 Pacific, Matt Humans, our buddy, will join us in studio for two segments as he breaks down his NFL card and also give out some college football and college basketball plays as well. As the kind of the calendar starts to shift towards college hoops, kind of taking center stage here a little bit in the month of December. But Michael, before we get into all the games today, we have to talk about the news that broke yesterday morning. The Los Angeles Chargers firing both head coach Brandon Staley and the general manager Tom Telesco. We talked a little bit about it. You joined us on the Lombardi Line yesterday as you were in transit to the state of New York there. But now that you've had a day to kind of, I guess, reflect and digest this news, the firing of Telesco and the firing of Staley, what was the fundamental issue about how we got here with both those guys being dismissed with four games to go?
Well, I think a lot of it, if you take the Telesco side, like there's a perception that this is a really talented team. And there are some talented players on the team like they have on a lot of NFL teams. But I would not call this a talented team, you know, and they've missed on some high level free agents, J.C. Jackson being the one. They paid all that money to him and he's not been able to come through. So, you know, when you look at building the team and constructing the team, they were not dominant in the defensive front. I know Bosa is a great player, can't stay healthy. Khalil Mack, you know, has been a good player this year, six sacks in one game, multiple games of two sacks, but not always the shows up in all the games. So, look, this defense has been an issue, right? So they haven't gotten any better with the defense. And then offensively, Kellen Moore was supposed to save the franchise. So I think it's really probably a clean slate. I don't think there's an intention here to say we're cleaning the slate because we're going to get Coach Y and give him all the authority. But I do think whoever they want to bring in, I think they wanted a change. And I think after 10 years with Telesco and 3 years with Staley, it was time for a change.
And the owner, Dean Spanos of the Chargers, had this to say in a statement after they announced the moves to move on from Telesco and Staley. Said, quote, "We need new vision. Doing nothing in the name of continuity was not a risk I was willing to take. Our fans have stood strong through so many ups and downs and close games. They deserve more. Frankly, they've earned more. Building and maintaining a championship caliber program remains our ultimate goal. And reimagining how we achieve that goal begins today." He now is named Giff Smith as the interim head coach, the outside linebackers coach, and then JoJo Wooden will be the interim general manager for the remainder of this 2023 season. But Spanos said it there in the statement, like, hey, we're not going to just stick to continuity just for the sake of continuity. Like, we have to move on. And some might argue, myself included, probably should have made this decision after the disaster down in Jacksonville at the playoffs last year, but they make the decision now, to which to me feels like a little bit of a waste of a season after what we saw a year ago.
Well, I mean, they took themselves out of the Sean Payton derby. I mean, Sean Payton was waiting for it. You know, he was looking for it. I mean, a lot of people were looking for the opportunity to come in and coach Justin Herbert. But this is bigger than Justin Herbert, right? The Staley's failures are on a lot of different levels, right? They're on the inability to improve a defense. Couldn't win a playoff game. I mean, Anthony Lynn won a playoff game. And he had a better record than Staley. He won 12 games in one season. So, you know, the last 6 years have been really right around 500, no matter who they've had on their team. And a lot of people believe that Spanos won't pay good money for a good coach. And here's the real issue you have, Femi, is you're in a conference now. You're in the division now. You got Andy Reid and you got Sean Payton. And those guys are used to winning. So are you going to hire Ben Johnson and think you're going to compete at that level? Is this just about a play caller? Or what I thought was refreshing in the statement was about a shift, about a new vision. And I think that's what they need. They need somebody to come in and build a championship program that enhances Herbert, that doesn't take away from him. Herbert's a good player. Yep. He's a really good player. And he takes a lot of hits for not being able to win a lot of games. But other than the people that believe Brady won all the games in New England, that most people in the NFL that understand football know it's a three-dimensional game, and it requires to be really good in all three phases and play complementary to win a championship. No one player in the NFL wins a title. It takes more than just a player. It takes great coaching. It takes great teamwork. It takes connectivity. And that's something that the Chargers haven't had. Frankly, they haven't had it since Staley got there. Remember now, I'm not going to let people forget this, that he was, you know, that when his first year, because he went for it on fourth down, he was viewed as the visionary. He was viewed as the next wave of coaches in the NFL because he went for it on fourth down. He was bold. He was aggressive. Well, all that boldness, all that aggressiveness really cost him with his team. Remember Keenan Allen when he tweeted out, "What are we doing?"
Yeah.
You know, it's one thing to sit there and say, well, the decision was right. The outcome was wrong. That's what most analytical people do.
Yep.
You can't say that in front of a team. You can't say that in front of your staff. You can't, because you have too many of those bad outcomes, good decisions. Your decision is going to be fired and you lose credibility. And I think what was so symbolic on Thursday night was this team was playing for Herbert in the past 5 weeks. Once they lost Herbert, they said, "We're not playing for you." I mean, Spanos had no choice after that game.
Yeah, I mean, Brandon Staley is almost like a tout on Twitter just saying, "Hey, bad variance. Sorry, the picks were bad this week. We had good process, though. So see you next week." But like you tweeted like during the game on Thursday saying the Chargers have no choice. The team has spoken there. And like, you could see it just in playing that like the first quarter. It was, "Oh, this game is over. These guys do not believe in any of this." Like there was no Herbert out there, obviously, with the finger injury. Keenan Allen had the heel. He didn't play in that game. And there was just nothing. There was no answers. And those guys were kind of just going through the motions. And the Raiders were able to take advantage, and it was just an embarrassing effort. Like 63 points. This is a team that scored 0 points 4 or 5 days ago. They scored 63 points on you. There was nothing that Spanos could do at that point. We all thought that this might happen at the end of the season, but after you get embarrassed, like you always say, once you embarrass the owner, it's over. It ended up being over Thursday night.
Well, I mean, look, when you watch the tape against Denver, when you watch the tape, really, you watch any of the tape, the effort, the intensity. I don't know what game Staley was watching about how he believed this team was still in playing hard. You just watch the tape. I'll tell you what's going to be really hard is for the next GM to come in there and correctly evaluate Kenneth Murray, because the way he's played, you're like, is he a good player or not? You know, because his tape is bad. A lot of these guys' tape is bad. And you're like, is it the coach or is it the talent? I mean, this is a hard dilemma because you're in this situation where the players are given no effort. And you got to call it like you see it. Is it because of the way they coach? I think so. Look, you know, it's one thing. Football's a game of competitiveness. It's a game of intensity. It's a game of motivation. It's a game of getting your players to play at a high level. It's not a game that's played on a spreadsheet. It's not. You need the spreadsheet to help you. You need analytics to help you grow. But to think that he was communicating his messaging to the team, have they ever played good defense in the 3 years he's been there? No, the answer is no. They've done nothing good other than they went for it on fourth down. I mean, 3 years ago, Pro Football Focus had him as the 12th best head coach in the NFL because he was aggressive. When I saw that, none of us, Mike Palm, all of us were going, are you kidding me? Ahead of Mike Tomlin? Like, we lose sight of what matters most in football. And it's not always going for it. There's certain situations you got to go for it on fourth down. There's certain, but every game is a different game within a game. And it's just not a universal thing. And I think this is really what happened to him. I think he lost the connection to the team and their confidence in him. And he couldn't fix the one thing he was paid to fix. And then he fires Joe Lombardi to fix the offense. And they're not as good with Kellen Moore as they were with Joe Lombardi.
Yeah, I think what you're saying, like, there's art that goes with the science. Like, you can't just look at a card and say, all right, in every situation, we're going to do X. And if this means this, we're going to do no, you got to coach the game in front of you. You got to coach the situation in front of you. And that's what Brandon Staley never did there. Yeah.
I'll give you a perfect example. Jakobi Meyers is one of the best pressed receivers in the league. If you walk up and press him, he is going to win at the line. And he's going to beat you down the field. Everybody in the league knows that, okay? You know that. If you walk up to him and you press him, good luck. And if you do it on the short side of the field where the hash mark is, and you really, that which is an easy throw for the quarterback, you got a real issue. What did he do in the game? Press corner Mike Davis. And why is that? Why are we surprised it was a touchdown? We're not. But see, that's the game. You could talk all the strategy you want. You could talk all the analytics you want. But if you can't process players and plays, what good is it? And that was the perfect example of why Staley talks about numbers but can't relate the numbers to the players.
Yeah, Staley, his last comments as Chargers head coach was, I know what I've done here for 3 years, and I know what I put into this, and I know what we're capable of going. I know the type of coach I am. I believe in myself. Well, I mean, self-belief is important, but the Chargers no longer believed in him, thus his firing Friday morning. All right, we'll get into Saturday's slate, starting with the Vikings at the Bengals. Coming up next, we're just getting started here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you're looking for a betting edge this college bowl season, the VSiN experts have you covered. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber with an introductory offer of only $9.99. VSiN Pro subscribers get access to our daily recap of the top plays made by VSiN show hosts and guests, tools like our betting splits that let you see where the money and bets are moving every game, and our college bowl betting guide where you can get picks for every bowl game. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe today to sign up for only $9.99 and become part of the Sports Betting Network. That's VSIN/subscribe. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi. Rich Gannon will be joining us in 15 minutes. Played 17 years in the NFL. Former MVP. Now does great work over at CBS Sports Network and Sirius XM. So we'll talk to Rich in 15 minutes. Get his thoughts on this weekend's games. His thoughts on the Raiders, obviously, and who he thinks will be the MVP here with four games left to go. But let's get into this Saturday slate, Michael. Like we mentioned at the top, fantastic triple header that the NFL has put together for us. All three games with playoff implications, and it starts in the jungle where the Bengals 3-point home favorites against the Minnesota Vikings. The total starting to get bet up a little bit here as we speak, now seeing 41s across the board here. I took the 3.5 earlier in the week here at 3. If you could find it at even money, I think that's a solid play on the Vikings. But how do you see this game playing out?
Well, I think this is an interesting game from the standpoint the Cincinnati Bengals really don't want to run the football, which is a good thing because the Vikings are really good in their run defense. And so this is a game where Nick Mullen, who is 10 and 15 as a starter, 6-7 on the road with a 65% completion and an average of 7.74 yards per attempt, needs to be very careful. The Bengals defensively are not good. And you can move the ball on the Bengals, but when they were winning games during the period before Joe Burrow got hurt, and when they kind of turned things around with their season, a lot of that was related to their ability to turn the ball over, to create turnovers. And this is what has got to happen for them today against the Cincinnati, against Nick Mullen, because Nick Mullen is prone to turn this ball over. You're going to gain yards. They're 31st in the National Football League in yards allowed, the Bengals. You're going to gain yards. It's hard to score points. And the Bengals, you know, you can run the ball on the Bengals, but without Madison, Chandler's got to be the back. So this will be an interesting game in terms of the setup of the game, strengths versus strength. They kind of match one another in the game. So, you know, and the way that the Jake Browning has played, 85% accurate on throws, 5 drops in 2 games. Mm-hmm. He's been dynamic. And they found a way to get Chase Brown the ball. They're one of the best screen teams in football. So this matchup, I could see why the over's ticking, because I think both teams can move the football, but this is going to come really down to Nick Mullen protecting the ball. If Nick Mullen turns the ball over and you got a Minnesota ticket, you're not going to win it.
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely a solid analysis there. Cause like you said, like he's got to protect the football, and that's what kind of got Josh Dobbs put on the bench there, like putting the ball in harm's way. And we obviously saw what happened a couple of weeks ago on the Monday night game against the Chicago Bears here. But when you talk about this Bengals offense, though, have you seen Zach Taylor really like tweak it? Like, are they running the Burrow offense, or has he done things to kind of help Jake Browning along the way?
No, they're not running the Burrow offense at all. I mean, they're basically, they got him under center way more than they would have Burrow. You know, they're calling as many pass plays as they have, but those pass plays are more about, they're more like runs. They're outside runs to help the quarterback kind of get some things going. So they're not trying to just pound it, you know, and they're able to run the football effectively. Mixon's, Chase Brown has really helped them, and he's given them a dynamic pass catcher. He's finally filled into the Perrine role that they really needed. They lost him a little bit last year. And so he's come in there. I mean, he's got 6 catches in 2 games for 87 yards. Think about that, Ben. 6 for 87. And so he's been very good. And Browning has been able to distribute the football. Look, when you have the kind of skilled players that they have on this team with T. Higgins, you know, they finally have him healthy now. Higgins is a down the field receiver to go along with Jamar Chase and Tyler Boyd inside the slot. You know, this is a lot of weaponry to handle. I think the other concern you have in this game too is you got to be worried about Minnesota's offensive line, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, where are they in their offensive line, and can they hold up? Brian O'Neill, their starting right tackle, will not play in the game. That's got to concern you. So you're going against a front that can rush the passer, right? Hendrickson and Hubbard and those guys. And you've got to be able to hold up, and you're going, and you've got to protect a quarterback who's prone to turn the ball over. So I think there lies it. You're playing on the road. You have to be really kind of careful here. So without O'Neal and a bunch of banged up offensive linemen, it makes it very challenging.
Yeah, Justin Jefferson, on the good news for the Vikings, he should be back and good to go there. The reports Thursday said that he expected to play after he had to miss the second half of last week's game against the Raiders with the back injury, or like a back or a rib injury. He got hit pretty hard over the middle, so Justin Jefferson should be good to play in this game. Let's get to the afternoon game, though, where we're seeing line movement right now as we speak here. Where I'm sitting at Circa, Michael, the Steelers just went to the favorite. They're now a one-point favorite in this game against the Indianapolis Colts. The total, 42.5. There's some 42s out there, but 42.5 seems to be the consensus number here. Do you agree with that line movement of flipping dog to favorite in favor of the Pittsburgh Steelers?
Well, I think this would have happened, Femi, a lot earlier in the week. What held this up was TJ Watt, right? Nobody wanted to go down this road if they thought TJ Watt wasn't going to play. And so because TJ Watt is playing, he's up for the game. Highsmith, they're still not sure whether he's going to play, but I think this is really about the injury report of the Steelers, and Watt going move this line. And look, is there, you know, I mean, how many times do we have to say Mike Tomlin is a dog, Mike Tomlin in a big game, Mike Tomlin this, Mike Tomlin that, you know, I mean, and I wanted to take it in the Russo pit contest yesterday with 1.5. It was still there at that time. I'm just having a hard time wrapping my head around Mitchell Trubisky. Now, I think Trubisky, if he doesn't play well, will get benched. I think they'll put Mason Rudolph, who hasn't thrown a pass since 2021.
Wow.
But, but this is a game where this Colt defense has not been good. You can run the ball in the Colts defense. Poor Elliot. I know he's sitting there cringing as I say this. Our Elliot Bowman, our producer. He's a huge Colt fan. But you can run the ball on him, and you can kind of control the line of scrimmage against their front. And that plays into what Pittsburgh wants to do. Pittsburgh wants to run the ball, play action pass. What the Colts' advantage is in this game is Trubisky's turnover prone. And they've got to take advantage of that. Now, we also know Minshew's much better playing in the dome. Minshew's much better, you know, when he has more control. What kept me away from Pittsburgh, and I understand the line movement, I do. What kept me away from Pittsburgh a little bit was, if you go back and watch Shane Steichen as the offensive coordinator of the Eagles last year against Pittsburgh, they did not run the ball against Pittsburgh, the Eagles, which last year they were a run team. They threw for over 300 yards. So what does that tell us? That tells us that Steichen really understands how to attack the Steelers' coverages, how they play, and what they need to do. Now, we know that the Colts don't have A.J. Brown. We know the Colts don't have Smith. but they have good players. Pierce has played well. Pittman's been playing well in his role. So I think if they can protect, I think they have a chance to throw the football. I think both teams can move the ball. You're just worried about Trubisky.
Yeah, well, that's the big if for the Indianapolis Colts in this game, is that if they can protect, because it looks like Highsmith should be good to go. He was able to clear the protocol as well. So both of those edge rushers, Watt and Highsmith, should be able to play. And important to note for Indianapolis, Braden Smith, their right tackle, he's out in this game once again. So they're banged up on that offensive line. And here comes one of the best pass rushers in the NFL coming after Gardner Minshew there. So Minshew's going to have to protect the ball, because we saw when the Colts played the Browns, Minshew had the fumbles, and that kind of what swung that game there. Myles Garrett kind of winning it for the Cleveland Browns there. On Elliott, on that note, he told me that this is going to be on the laptop. The big screen is going to be the Purdue basketball game. They're taking on Arizona. That's a top five showdown, Michael. They're going on at the same time. So he'll have Purdue on, and then he'll have the Colts on as well. So there'll be a little bit of a double dip for our guy Elliott here.
Well, I got to tell you, look, you know, if you're a Steeler fan and this is a must win for you, because you got only one more home game left. If you're Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. you have one more home game left, and that's going to be a real challenge, right? And so you've got to find a way to win this game. If you can't beat this game, you're on the road for three or four games. And I think that's really going to be the problem. I mean, you got to really do a good job of handling that and coming back, because you still have to go to Seattle and you still have to go to Baltimore.
Yeah, and those are two teams that will likely need those games as well. Baltimore fighting for the one seed, Seattle fighting for their playoff lives. Real quick, and we'll obviously carry this on later on in this hour, but the Broncos and the Lions, this game is the primetime game in Detroit. Detroit out to 4.5-point favorites, but I'm seeing some fives now start to pop up on the board. 48 is our total here. Is this just a bad spot for Denver? Third straight road game. I think a lot of people are playing against them with that angle in mind.
Well, I think this line's been funny. I monitor line movement all week, and I have different color codes. This line started out really with money coming in on Detroit, moving the line down. Then money came back in on Denver. I don't think this is a pros Joe's game. I think this is pros and Joe's on both sides. I don't think you can get your hand wrapped around it. Now, look, Denver's played better on defense. There's no question. I mean, since the last 6 weeks, I think they're in the top five of EPA. They've done a nice job. But Denver's going to have to throw the ball in this game. It's hard to run the ball in Detroit. And Russell Wilson, when he has to throw the ball, 38 passes against Miami, 37 against Minnesota. This is going to come down to how well he can pass the football. You know, we can talk more about it after the break. But to me, this is a game where Wilson's got to play well.
Mm-hmm. We'll talk about this game with Rich Gannon coming up next here as he joins us here on the Lombardi Line. Don't go away. This is the DraftKings Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Juice Reel is a free betting intelligence app and a tool that every bettor needs. And what it does for you, it links your betting accounts into one app, delivers in-depth analytics on your betting history. Juice Reel, all you got to do is find out for yourself by downloading the app Juice, like orange juice, and Reel, R-E-E-L. Download the app in the Apple App Store or Google Play Store. It's free. Juice Reel, Juice, R-E-E-L. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line. We're rolling along on a Saturday, an NFL Saturday here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi on the road out in New York, and joining us now, someone, Michael, that you know well from your guys' time back with the Silver and Black in the early 2000s, the one and only Rich Gannon, played 17 years in the NFL, former MVP, now an analyst for CBS Sports Network and Sirius XM. Rich, we appreciate you waking up with us this morning. Real quick, before we get into Saturday's games and the weekend games, your thoughts from the Thursday night shellacking that the Raiders put on the Chargers earlier this week?
Well, it's amazing to go from scoring 0 points to 63. It tells you that one team wanted to play, one team was ready to play, one team played with some energy and a sense of urgency, the other team wasn't interested. And that's really disappointing in the NFL. And of course, it resulted in the general manager and head coach losing their job. I'm not suggesting that they shouldn't have lost their job, but the next coach that comes in is going to watch that tape, and he's going to watch all 17 games, and he's going to make his own evaluation. I would just caution those players as they finish out the regular season that every play is being evaluated. That was an embarrassment to the players and to the NFL.
Rich, I said the same thing earlier on the show today. I mean, like, if you're the new GM and you walk in and you watch Kenneth Murray play the last 2 weeks, you're like, are we sure he's a good player? You know, and if you watch some of these guys, Rashard Johnson, you say he's a good player, and they're supposed to be one of their first round picks. So I don't think that message was getting through. I think there was a lost continuity, and everybody just thinks, well, if they get better on offense, they're going to be really good. But, you know, having played for Marty Schottenheimer, having played for really good coaches, that it's just not about one thing. It's about playing complementary football, something the Chargers couldn't do.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, obviously not having a starting quarterback. I mean, this is a completely different team with Justin Herbert. In a way, Michael, you know, I really felt like the kid was wasting away. I think he's one of the premier players at his position in the league. And yet, you know, he's got a losing record in Los Angeles. The defense has never been good around him. I don't think the coaching has been good around him. I think if anyone's excited about the changes that are coming to Los Angeles, it should be Justin Herbert. But they've got some tough decisions to make. You know, you look at their salary cap, they've got some aging players that are making a lot of money, and they've got to decide what to do moving forward. But that's going to be a challenge for the next general manager and head coach that step in.
We're speaking with Rich Gannon, former NFL quarterback, MVP in 2002 for the Oakland Raiders back then, obviously now a serious XM NFL analyst over at CBS Sports Network as well. Rich, we were talking before we went to break in the last segment about this Broncos-Lions game. Obviously, having played in the AFC West, I'm sure you keep a close eye on what's going on in that division. Denver has really had this resurgence over the past 8 weeks or so. I believe they won 6 of their last 7 games. Now they're 4-point underdogs, 4.5-point underdogs, I should say, against the Detroit Lions, total sitting at 48 here. Do you see Denver being able to still keep this competitive against Detroit, or is this a good spot for Detroit to kind of get right after a couple losses back-to-back weeks?
I know this may sound crazy, but I kind of like Denver. I really do. You mentioned they've won 6 of the last 7 games. I think they're taking care of the football. I think defensively, this is a much different defense than we saw earlier in the season when they gave up 70 points and 700 yards to the Dolphins. I think that they've really tightened things up. I think they're playing with more confidence. I think Detroit, you look at Detroit right now, I don't want to say they've hit the wall, but Jared Goff has been inconsistent. The turnovers have been a cause for concern, and they're not getting the pass rush. I mean, they're really struggling with their pass rush in Detroit, and to me, not playing as well in the back end. So I kind of like Denver going in there and taking care of business this weekend.
You know, I do too, Rich. I think Denver, you know, one of the things that I've been missing is Goff's gotten more pressure than he ever has. And he's turned the ball over more like he was when he was at the Rams than he's been at the Lions. And Detroit, you know, they can't pressure. And if Wilson can play well, which he has, and he's running the ball more this year, he's run for the third most first downs this season than he did in his career. And 49 was the most. He's got 37 already, so he's got a chance to run for the most. And when he does that, it creates a whole other atmosphere. Talk a little bit about what you're seeing with Miami's offense. And we know when they lost Hill, what that does, and can they recover if he doesn't play tomorrow?
You know, I think the Jets will play him tough. I really do. We just had C.J. Mosley on my show the other day. And, you know, that defense has been really consistent. And I think when you take into consideration the struggles that they've had offensively, you know, I think the spread, you guys know better than I do. I think it was 9 points. I don't know. I think it's a lot closer than that. You know, I look at this offense and I really like what they're doing down there in Miami. I think Mike does a great job with the running game. I think that's really where it starts. I think with Mostert and Achane, and I think this group, I think their team speed is a problem. I think Tua, when he's in rhythm, I mean, he gets the ball out on time. He's very effective. I think where he struggles is with a congested, muddy pocket. If he can get some pressure up inside and force him to get off the spot and force him to, make plays not in rhythm, I think that's really what you got to do with a quarterback like Tua. But listen, the big challenge, I think, when you play a team like Miami is tackling. I know that sounds so basic, guys, but tackling. I mean, just limiting the yards after catch, the yards after contact. Mostert's not an easy tackle, nor is Achane. You look at that group they have on the perimeter. I don't know that – I haven't seen – is Tyreek Hill – he's still – is that going to be a – is he not ruled out yet, is he?
No, it's going to be a full game time decision. I mean, I assume he's going to go, but you and I both know, Rich, when you're dealing with an ankle and you can't, if he could change direction, he would go. It's not a decision, but I think a lot of it is he can't change direction.
And I tell you what, when you don't have him in there, okay, and now all of a sudden you're the Jets and you've got Sauce Gardner. You don't have to worry about Tyreek Hill. I'm telling you something, that makes the defensive game plan a whole lot easier.
Yeah, and we saw a little bit of that Monday night when the Titans were going up against the Dolphins in the two quarters that Tyreek Hill ended up missing in that game. Tennessee with the big upset. Right now, that line is still sitting at 9, but there's some 7.5s on the board with Miami favored against the Jets here. Well, Rich, this is obviously a big week for the MVP, and then a lot of the discussion this week has been about that award. Brock Purdy is a big favorite against the Niners. You have Dak Prescott going up against the Buffalo Bills. Lamar Jackson gets a primetime game against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Right now, with 4 games left to go, who's your MVP and why?
Well, I do get one of those votes, and right now I think the three that you mentioned are certainly in that category of strong consideration. I think Tyreek Hill, if he can put together another couple strong games, I don't know what the ankle where he's at, but I think you look at Dak Prescott. He's thrown 20 touchdowns and just 2 interceptions in his last 7 starts. He's playing really well. Brock Purdy, for whatever reason, guys, and I can't figure it out. It's like he's like the Rodney Dangerfield of NFL quarterbacks. The kid goes out every week and plays. Honestly, he goes out every week and he plays lights out. People are like, well, it's the run game. Well, it's Kyle Shanahan. Well, it's their team. They're a complete team. I don't know. All I know is the kid's having a ridiculous season. So, and of course, Lamar Jackson, I think they're the number one rushing team. He's a big part of it. He's only thrown 6 picks, I think, so far this season. So to me, I think it's a really tight race. And I need the next 3 or 4 weeks to figure this thing out.
Hey, Rich, I know you had great respect for Mike McCarthy as a play caller. What are you seeing in him this year that's different than when he was calling plays for you?
I just think that it's a whole lot different for the quarterback, Michael. And I just think that, I think the first 4 weeks of the season were kind of a turning point. I think Mike went back last offseason, they sat down and they really got together. And I think they looked at the interception reel, not just from last year, but the last 2 years. They looked at the sack reel. I think this kid has taken ownership of the offense. I think his feet are so much better. I think you watch him throwing in rhythm. I think he's become the CEO of that operation. I think he's got a better command of the offense, the checks, the protections. And I didn't see that in the past with Kellen Moore. I think there's more detail in his play. And I think his confidence has soared. I think remember last year we watched he throw a ball in the flat to a waiting linebacker. I mean, just throwing balls. He did just blind throws. He didn't see the flat defender or late down the middle. We're not seeing those plays this year from Dak Prescott. I think this kid has turned a corner. I think he's become one of the elite players at the quarterback position.
Hey, Rich, we've got about 40 seconds left here. The Kansas City Chiefs have been a big topic this week after what we saw last Sunday. Can their offense be fixed as we head into the stretch run here?
I don't know that it's going to get back to what it was in the past in the next couple of weeks. I think the receiving position has held them back. There's been too many drops there. I don't think the quarterback trusts that group. Guys, check out Travis Kelce. His production is way down in terms of you look at his – he's not getting off the line of scrimmage. You don't see the explosiveness. You don't see the change of direction ability. You don't see him creating as much separation. Honestly, I don't know that he's 100%. And to me, the two tackles are really struggling.
Yeah, no question. I echo that. I mean, Kelsey's not the same guy, and the offensive line ain't the same. There's no question. Rich, thank you so much, buddy.
You guys are the best. Have a great day.
Awesome stuff. And that is Rich Gannon, former NFL MVP, now analyst at CBS Sports Network and Sirius XM. All right, we'll be back to talk more about these games on the other side.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
In the NBA, the game can change in an instant, but no matter how the action unfolds, DraftKings Sportsbook has your back. This week, new customers can score 150 instantly in bonus bets just for betting $5 on basketball. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VSiN. The crown is yours. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line. Michael Lombardi, Femi Abebefe hanging out here on a Saturday, December 16th. We get three NFL games. Then we get a nice full slate tomorrow. No more bye weeks. Now we're in the stretch run here in the final 4 weeks of the regular season before we get to the real games, the playoffs, which is it's unbelievable how fast the season has gone by. It kind of makes me sad because I can already see us talking off season. I'm like, I want more games. But hey, what can you do? Let's get into tonight's game, though, Michael, between the Denver Broncos and the Detroit Lions. We talked about it a little bit with Rich Gannon. He likes Denver. You said that you kind of like Denver in this spot as well. Is that just with the points, or would you maybe sprinkle a little bit on the money line and think the Broncos can win this thing outright?
Well, I definitely think the Broncos can win it outright. I mean, the line has moved all over the place, right? And so when you kind of have to look at the game through how the game is going to be played, right? And this Bronco run defense has not been great. So you feel like when the Lions can run the football and they have balance, you know, they are really a good team in terms of their offense can play in rhythm. We know that Denver has done a really good job of creating turnovers. We also know that when we watch the games, you know, Detroit, for some reason, has not been able to rush nor protect. Now, Ragnon may come back. Their offensive line could be healthy. Mm-hmm. But I think when you sit down and say, what's the problems with the Lions over the last few weeks has been their offensive line production and Goff turning the ball over. He's been under pressure too much. So if they don't have that, then offensively, defensively, they become a liability. They can stop the run. They're physical. They're tough. But they have a hard time stopping passing teams. Now, Miami passed the ball more than any team against them, 38. Miami threw it a bunch, right? So, I mean, excuse me, Denver threw it a bunch against Miami when they got behind.
Yep.
Then they threw it a bunch against Minnesota because they couldn't run the ball. So this is a game that's going to come down to Wilson. He averages 200 yards passing per game, which is the lowest in his career, right? And so he's got to play at a high level. Sean has managed him. Now, what's been really good is when he was in Seattle, he wouldn't run. His last year in Seattle, he ran for 183 yards. He wouldn't run anymore. Mm-hmm. He stopped running, and he wouldn't run for first downs. So this year, he's averaging 24.2 yards rushing per game. That's the most since 2020. His 31 first downs is the third most in his career, right? And so now his most was 47. So he's got a chance to get that. If he moves and runs, there's plays to be made here on tape. And the receivers for Denver, whether it's Judy, whether it's Sutton, you know, they got a chance to make some plays. And Sean does a good job of managing the game, slowing the game down, you know, being in it, get it to the fourth quarter, keep it going. They love close games. Why? Right? Because their field goal kicker is the fifth best in the National Football League in field goal percentage. And that's why that you can win close games. Conversely, New England, their field goal kicker is the worst kicker in the league by a lot. He's 32nd. They can't win a close game.
Well, we'll get into New England a little bit shortly here. But why do you think the market is betting against Denver in this spot here? Because now we're seeing five pretty much across the board. Who knows what we end up closing at? It could be 5.5. We might even get to 6, I guess, if you hold out long enough here. Do you think that the market, there's something that they're missing about this Broncos team?
Yeah, I think they think the Broncos team is overvalued defensively. I think that's the key, right? I think they think the Broncos defense is overvalued and that, you know, Detroit at home is a different team, right? Yeah. We think Detroit, you know, Goff's a profitable quarterback at ATS. Detroit at home are completely different. And the Broncos on the road, you know, have not been, look, they go into Houston and they start slowly. They can't get that done. So I think a lot of that is kind of where this is. And when you look at it, Wilson is 17-25 straight up over the past 3 years. Like he hasn't been able to deliver in clutch games either. So, but I think when you look at this Bronco defense, they're third in EPA play since week 6 of the season. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, so they've really improved, and credit Vance Joseph and credit Sean Payton for fixing the defense. You know, they were able, you could complete almost 75% of your passes against them early in the season. And now that they've kind of got that out, they've basically had the lowest completion percentage against them at 55%. The Miami game kind of screws up all your numbers on Denver. You have to be very careful. I think this is a play if you're taking Detroit. You're saying Detroit's really good at home. They're going to take advantage of an overvalued Denver team. Denver's not going to be able to do what they want. And I think a lot of this is lack of confidence in Wilson.
Yeah. And a lot of those Broncos defensive numbers too, a lot of it has been aided by turnovers. If Goff can protect the football, which as of recent would be a big if he can protect the football, maybe the Detroit Lions can kind of have their way with this defense with a healthy offensive line. We'll see what happens later on tonight. Should be a big home field advantage for this Lions team. Night game primetime in the Motor City. We see how those games kind of go, and they tend to go in favor of the Lions.
You know what's funny, Femi, is that there's a stat out there. I was talking about this last night, and I never thought about it. I saw this on Bet Labs this week, and it's teams that play in party cities that play on the road for 2 weeks in a row. For example, you go to Atlanta, or you go to Las Vegas, Los Angeles, Miami, New Orleans, or New York, which you're really never in New York. You're in New Jersey, but that's a horse of another color. So when you go to those teams that have to play on the road again, they go back on the road again. They are 32-42 straight up, 30-42-2 against the spread over the last 20 years. Denver qualifies for that. Minnesota qualifies for that. Wow. I'm not saying that that's why this line's moving to Detroit, but I do know this. I do know this from being in the league, that there was always the residual effect. If you played Pittsburgh, the next week you were going to have a tough game. Mm-hmm. Not because Pittsburgh's a party city, but because Pittsburgh beat you up and you physically weren't ready to go. I think there's a lot of that to some of these games as well.
I mean, I think it's kind of like when you play San Francisco now. Like, if you play San Francisco the next week, it's always like, man, like we're beat up a little bit just because that's such a physical team there. Something to keep in mind sort of going forward. And also maybe the Broncos enjoy themselves a little bit of L.A. Who knows? We'll find out tonight, I guess. Let's get to the New England Patriots, because the report earlier this week from Tom Curran over at NBC Sports Boston said that Robert Kraft, the owner, has made a decision to part ways with Bill Belichick. And he made that decision after the Week 10 loss to the Colts in Germany. Curran said, quote, "When they came out of Germany, conversations I had that week made it very clear that a decision was made. They were going to play out the string, and at the end of the year, there would be a parting of ways for a variety of reasons here." Now, we've talked about this on our podcast, the GM Shuffle. We encourage everybody to listen to the full conversation there. But for our audience that is just joining us now here on Nesson, like, what are your thoughts on this report? And I guess, is there fire where there might be smoke?
Well, I think this, look, I think it's pretty clear that, you know, there's going to be a meeting at the end of the year. I found it interesting that this was reported after the Germany trip, where we know Mr. Kraft mentioned that how important the game was, and then they lose 10-7. And so, but now it takes 3 weeks for the report to come out, which is interesting. And I don't doubt Tom Curran. He does a great job on reporting on the Patriots. I think this is really going to be decided in a meeting, because I think there's two elements here. There's the element of, do we want to continue going down this lone star model relationship we have, whereas we're giving you complete control of our team, or do we want to take some control back? Right. Mm-hmm. And so the only way you're going to take some control back and puts other people in a higher place is you're going to have to make that decision. And I think that's really what it comes down to. What's the vision of how we want to run the organization for the next 10 years? And I think that's really what's that meeting is going to be about. And the answers to the questions in that meeting may have already been set. I don't know. But I think that's where we are. And I think if the Kraft family wants to take more of an active control of the team, you know, utilizing some of the things that they've done, whether it's the soccer team or something else, and they feel like they need a more collaborative effort within their building, and they're not have a coach who has control over everything, then I think, you know, they've got to make those adjustments.
Belichick was asked by reporters about this on Wednesday, said, quote, "We're getting ready for Kansas City."
Yeah.
It's what he said. I mean, what else was he going to say there as they're 8.5-point dogs here? But across the way at a faraway place off the grid here, a place that books the Chargers' next head coach, Belichick right now is the favorite to become the Chargers' head coach. I think a lot of people want to see like Belichick and Herbert maybe working together and see what that might become.
Well, I think this, if Dean Spanos were smart, and let's play a hypothetical game, mm-hmm. and Belichick was available, and he called Andy Reid up and said, "Andy, who's the last coach you want me to hire? Like, who would be like the one you don't want?" You know, Andy would call him up and say, "Hire Bieniemy, or hire Matt Nagy, or hire, you know, Mike Kafka." That's who he'd want in there. You know, he wouldn't want Belichick in there. It's the same thing if you called Howie Roseman on the phone and said, "Hey, Howie, who do you want us to hire in Washington, or who don't you want us to hire?" Mm-hmm. That would be the answer. I mean, he's the greatest coach of all time. You know, so like he's going to have interest. I mean, why wouldn't he? He can build a program. He can deliver a product, and he can give an owner something that very few of these owners have right now, which is credibility.
Yeah. I mean, you make that hire and everybody's like, okay, we're cooking with something here with Bill Belichick there. So I think it's a very, very fascinating situation. Imagine a division with Bill Belichick, Andy Reid, and Sean Payton. Like, if you're the Raiders, good luck.
Imagine a division if you hire Ben Johnson and Antonio Pierce against that. How do you win that one?
You don't win the division. Hour number two, Lombardi Look At, coming up next.